This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Are you ready for a pregnancy and birth story? I am, and I'm so delighted to have Heather with us today. Hi, Heather. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you for being here. So I'm excited. You sent in, I asked a little questions before we do the podcast, and you said 40-year-old plus size woman of a baby who just turned one and another one due in May. So I'm really excited to have that talk about also advanced maternal age, because I feel like it's something that we get so focused on just plus size stuff that we don't end up talking about, well, what about the people that are above the age of 35 and who are classified as well as having a higher BMI as having, you know, an advanced maternal age pregnancy, which you can still have totally healthy outcomes, but you get treated a little bit different and have additional screenings. So I'm really excited to hear your journey and your story.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your first one that just turned one, your first baby there. What was that first finding out you were pregnant experience like? Were you and your partner trying, or was it a surprise?
Yeah, we were trying. I call it trying. We were trying to also not try. Does that make any sense?
It does. It does. You know, I think a lot of us can relate to that.
I mean, I've known I wanted to be a mom since I think I was in the single digits. Like, it's always been a dream of mine to have kids, and it, for lots of reasons we don't need to get into in this topic, but different relationships ending and stuff like that, not finding the right person, you know, it just hadn't happened for so long. And then we actually did have a pregnancy that ended in an early miscarriage,
which
was
really
devastating for me because it was like, I don't know, I'm already over 35. Is it even going to happen again? Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
And then right around the time that pregnancy would have been born, if it hadn't been a miscarriage, right around that due date, I found out again that I was pregnant.
Wow. Really, what timing, because that can be such a delicate and emotional time. And then to find out that you were expecting, how were you feeling? Because we've heard from other people who have experienced a loss and then they get pregnant. And those first few months, if not the entire pregnancy, it has a lot of anxiety to it.
Oh, absolutely. I really didn't feel, I mean, of course, throughout the pregnancy, the anxiety went down, but it wasn't until the baby was born that I really was like, okay, it's not going to go wrong during the pregnancy now because she's out. But
I appreciate it when people share that, because I think it helps to normalize those feelings, because as a society, we're led to believe that, oh, pregnancy is this joyous time and you should just be really happy and thankful and excited. And yes, but you still have grief and you still need to feel all that you're feeling, and that's perfectly normal too.
Absolutely. And you know, for me at least, it's somehow, now that I'm not pregnant with her and she's out, it's like it's not all on me anymore. Like somehow, like I just had throughout the whole battle pregnancy and the one I'm having now, it's this fear of like, if something happens, I know in my logical brain that it's not my fault, but I still can't stop worrying that what if I did something wrong?
Yeah.
You know, I had a cup of coffee last week. Is that going to be it? And of course it's not, but you know, I can't stop thinking things like that. So
that's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And I know you're not alone in feeling that way. What was it like finding a care provider for this pregnancy? Did you go back to who you were with before? Was this someone new?
So my care provider was somebody I know kind of, or I sort of know from my professional side, who I picked for my first pregnancy. And that went fine. That person is an OB, but I actually realized that I would align better with midwifery care. And so for this pregnancy, I've actually shifted over for midwifery care because I get a little more engagement and we have like kind of longer conversations, more listening to me and my needs than I felt like I got in my first pregnancy.
Yeah, there's definitely different models of care. And it's great that you found the one that is right for you now. During this first pregnancy, what were those conversations like in those first few visits in the beginning about, you know, being advanced maternal age, which I'm so glad they don't call it, well, I think they still do on some paperwork, but geriatric pregnancy. And then also having a higher BMI. Like, it sounds like it's someone who you knew from work. So maybe those conversations were slightly different than they might have been otherwise, or maybe they were I don't know. Why don't you let us know?
You know, weirdly, it almost feels like it's like they don't even want to mention it. Mm. Like, they still weigh me every time I'm there. And then, like, it's still listed on my, like, problem list or whatever. The kind of diagnoses I have. One is high BMI. But, like, actually, day-to-day in the conversations we were having, like, it didn't even get brought up.
Wow.
And it almost felt like they were trying to, this is my probably in my head, but it almost felt like it was like, we're avoiding talking about it because we don't want to hurt your feelings or, you know, just like point out what your weight is or whatever. And while that's better than saying, obviously you're higher BMI, so you're going to have all these problems, it also felt a little like, yeah, I want you to still address everything that's going on for me.
Yeah.
And if you have actual concerns, you should tell me those too, and not just put it in my chart, but not say it.
Yeah, I hear that from people. They're like, I'm so glad my care provider didn't say anything about my weight. And I'm like, well, I want people to feel good about their experiences, but we also have some evidence to show that, you know, limiting some weight gain during pregnancy can reduce our risk. Not you can absolutely gain weight, but there's weight gain guidelines. Mm-hmm. So it's helpful to know things that we can do to reduce our risk, but it's really important of how these conversations unfold, because we never want someone to feel ashamed, but it's also nice to know certain things that might make you make certain choices around wellness and nutrition and physical activity.
Right.
So it's a tightrope that a lot of care providers are trying to navigate in a new way now that we're all becoming better patient advocates. But when you're working with someone who you also have a professional relationship with, I can understand why certain conversations probably weren't unfolding.
Yeah.
How did you feel personally about your age and then about your weight during pregnancy?
Yeah, I mean, my age, it is what it is. I can't make myself any younger or anything like that. You know, so I just kind of accepted it. And I know that at any age, the biggest chance is that everything's going to be fine. And
yes,
there's no sudden line that says, okay, now you're screwed. So, you know, it is what it is. I felt fine in myself. And, you know, if because I'm over 35, it means you're going to recommend a few more ultrasounds or whatever, then sweet, I get to see the baby a little bit more. And that's fine, too.
That's a great way of looking at it.
In terms of my weight, I think for me, it was, so I have a lot of experience with doctors in the past with the blood pressure cuffs that they use, those automated ones. They always hurt and like even leave marks on my arm for days afterwards and stuff. And so I end up having high blood pressure whenever I'm at the doctor's office, but I don't at home.
Right.
And so for me, it was more the blood pressure, which I feel like is like next to my weight, because it hasn't happened for a long time, thankfully, but I have such a, it's ingrained in me, this experience of, oh, you have high blood pressure because you're too big and you need to get smaller so that you can reduce your blood pressure, and you're bad because you're big or whatever. And, you know, and it's just, I've experienced that enough times that even though it hasn't happened in years, I still end up with high blood pressure because I'm like, okay, this thing's going to hurt me and they're going to tell me that I need to lose weight because I'm too big and blah, blah, blah. And so my blood pressure is high at this office.
I mean, white coat syndrome is a real thing. I mean, it is.
Yeah, even for people without high BMI.
Yes, it happens to people of all sizes. And also, you know, I'll put a resource in the show notes of like, how should you have your blood pressure taken? Okay, you should be seated with your feet firmly planted on the ground for at least 5 minutes. You shouldn't be talking. Your back should be supported. You should have, I think, empty your bladder, not have any caffeine or exercised in like a certain amount of time. Like there's a long list. Okay, can anyone listening raise your hand if all of those things have happened when you're getting a blood pressure, let alone the correct size cuff being used? Hardly ever do all of these things happen for us to make sure we're getting an accurate reading. So if the bare minimum is advocating for the correct size cuff and that you're seated and not out of breath the minute you're being rushed back after being weighed, I mean, we got to do some advocacy to just even help. But it is so hard to speak up for ourselves in those moments.
Yeah, having it be tied right next to the weight and like, you know, stand there and look at what your weight is and expect them to, you know, judge you silently or verbally and then sit down and do your blood pressure. I actually started just saying, you can do my weight now, but I want to do the blood pressure at the end of the day.
Yes, yes, yes. I was going to add that. Thank you. Yes, yes. Do it at the end when you're more relaxed.
Yeah. And honestly, that also was after I got to either to see the baby or hear the heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so I know that it's still okay too,
yes.
You know, because part of me was always afraid that I'm going to get brought into the room and I'm about to be told that the baby isn't alive anymore.
Right.
And I had that fear through the whole pregnancy. And so I, you know, that's sitting on me. And then you're going to take my blood pressure now. Like, of course it's going to be high.
When you first said, I'd like to have the blood pressure taken at the end, did you get any pushback on that?
No, they just said, okay, make sure you remind us.
Great. Okay, did everyone listening hear that? Like, okay, I think, I mean, I haven't had the higher blood pressure white coat syndrome, which is shocking to me. But if I start, that's something I'm going to do. I always advocate to be sitting down and that the blood pressure cuff is the right size, because I've definitely had it not be the right size. And then I definitely did have higher blood pressure, but I haven't asked to be at the end. And I think I might just start doing that anyways, because, you know, maybe it would. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's brilliant, honestly. It makes a lot of sense, especially for people who have experienced a loss in the past, and that prenatal appointments are, it can be a triggering time as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I love that. So how did your pregnancy progress?
My pregnancy was pretty thankfully uneventful.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it went kind of normally. The ultrasounds were all good. They told us they thought it was a boy when it was actually a girl at first, so that was kind of funny, but, you know, that's fine. We weren't really fussed about what, boy or girl anyway. But yeah, and all the testing came back good. You know, of course, they did warn me about the potential for diabetes and having to do that test, but that came back totally normal too.
The earlier screening for gestational diabetes?
So the first trimester, just the blood test was totally normal, but then there's the glucose tolerance test, the drinking, the nasty sugar water stuff.
Right.
at 20-something weeks.
Yeah, 24 to 28 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, I think I did it at like 28 last time. I'm supposed to do 26 this time for reasons. But yeah, it all came back fine. And, you know, the only concern was the high blood pressure that the doctors had. Again, I knew it wasn't actually real.
Yeah.
But because of that, they were trying to advocate for inducing me. Mm. And I had to really fight back on that, because I wanted it to be able to happen naturally. And I was able to renegotiate because they wanted to induce me at like 39 weeks. And I was like, no, that's not happening. I'm not showing up for that. But I did agree that if the baby doesn't come naturally by 40 weeks and 6 days, so right before 41 weeks, that fine, we can induce them.
Can you share a little bit about how that conversation went? Because I feel like so many people are in that situation where they're told, we want to induce you. And for them, they're looking at your, you know, you're labeled as higher risk. They're saying that you have high blood pressure, even though you know you don't, and you're monitoring at home fine. But this is the recommendation being given. You know that no one can force a mentally competent adult to make those decisions. But often in those conversations, you feel as if you don't have a choice. So how did you navigate that? Because I'm sure people would want to know.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, I had the frank conversation with my doctor of, you know, why are you actually really recommending this? And is there really an actual problem, or is it just because of, again, the blood pressure, the age, the BMI, or whatever it is? And is it kind of all these maybe pseudo things, or is it true? Like, there's a problem. And I said, you know, if there's a problem, that's a totally different story. But until there's a problem, I want to let my body do things on its own, and I want to trust in my body.
And what was your care provider's response to that?
Kind of sure. You know, okay. You know, it wasn't, she definitely tried to say, you know, I mean, babies are fine at 37 weeks to be born, you know, and things like that. But can I kind of put a little snarky back? Like, okay, but if they're fine at 37, why don't they come at 37? Mm, you know?
Yeah. You know?
Like, I want, you know, I think that I want to let this baby develop as long as they feel like they need to until they're born and until they come. And you know, if things, again, start looking bad, or if I really do start developing actual signs of preeclampsia or something, because that's a concern with the high blood pressure, I'm paying attention to that. Well, I will come in the moment I start having blurred vision and headaches and feeling dizzy. But until then, I want to just let it be. And I think I was kind of firm and really questioned. And I think it's hard because sometimes with the doctors, especially the doctors, and my midwife kind of had a little more engaging with me about kind of helping me make the decisions too. But the doctor really kind of was like, this is our recommendation. And so I had to have the kind of self-confidence to say, does that have to be really firm, or, you know, what can we, are there other options? Can we do other things?
Yeah. And I love how you framed it of, look, if this is an actual real problem happening and concern, like, I want to do whatever is best for, you know, my baby. Of course, we all want that. But there's often, oh, well, we have concerns, or, oh, there's, oh, there's, or not, I won't say, oh, there's increased risk. Let's say it that way. There's increased risk, but there's, we're not seeing certain red flags that would be like, we need to immediately induce. So there's that, again, tightrope. I think that a lot of pregnancy care, maternity care is there often sometimes is a lot of gray area. And that's where if we just give a little more time with knowing that there always are going to be some risks either way. No part of pregnancy for people of any size goes without risks. But you knew what you wanted and you advocated for that. And I'm sure your care provider would have spoken up firmly if there was some true concern of why the induction should have happened at 39 weeks.
Right.
Yeah. So how did things go after 39 weeks?
Things continue to go fine. I had the day before the real labor, I had kind of contractions that didn't end up fitting into a pattern or things like that. So it was kind of like, oh, is this it? Okay, no, it's not it. But then, yeah, it one day after 40 weeks, it was, woke me up in the middle of the night. It was real.
Wow. Oh, that's so exciting. So 40 weeks and one day, your baby was ready to come into the world.
Yep.
Oh, what was, share your birth experience with us. So labor started in the middle of the night.
Yeah. So, labor started in the middle of the night, and it was pretty intense. And it was pretty close together already in terms of like the timing of the contractions. It was probably like 7 or something minutes when it kind of started. Don't quote me on that exactly. I don't remember now, but it was approximately that. And we had already, of course, had bags packed and stuff. I have older stepkids who were at the house, so we had to wake them up and get them ready to go. But I kind of took as long as I could. But I knew, even though I never had a birth before, my other family members had had pretty quick labors. And so, and it was obviously the contractions were getting kind of close together. So I knew I didn't want to wait at home for too long.
That's so smart. Before going. I think knowing our mother's birth history helps us and can play a role in our own. Does that always mean that's the case? Absolutely not. But if your mom always had quick, short labors, I think it's smart. You know, we say, hey, stay at home as long as possible, but that's not always the greatest advice for everyone. So I'm glad you listened to your intuition based on your own family history.
Yeah. And also where we live, it was a bit of a drive to get to the hospital. So
yeah, then that's really important.
Yeah, we don't need pulling over on the side of the road.
I mean, those videos go viral, but it's probably not what that person wanted.
Right. I don't think anybody who makes a viral video like that meant to do that ahead of time.
But it shows that babies can be born anywhere. But yeah, so you want to leave with enough time, obviously, to be at the hospital in a comfortable amount of time so you're not stressing as well.
Right. Yep. Yeah, so we had to get the stepkids to their mom and stuff too, so we had to factor that in. Over the course of the drive, the contractions kept getting closer and closer together. So we had been planning to drop them off at their mom's house, but realized that that wasn't an option.
Wow, it is going fast for you. Wow,
going fast, yeah. So by the time I got to the hospital, of course, this is. I think it was at like 5 a.m. by that point. And this is in the middle of COVID too. So I walked in, my husband had to wait for the kid's mom to arrive. So I had to go in by myself. And I walked in, obviously in a lot of, pain, contractions, intense moments. And they, there was a person at the front who asked me if I needed a wheelchair, and I said I didn't think I needed to. I think I could walk. And she asked me to put on a new mask and then just sent me up the elevator to the labor and delivery floor alone and with nobody pointing me where I'm going or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
And then I got up there and there's nobody on that floor. Oh, no. The elevator. And I was like, and I hadn't been able to do any tours or anything ahead of time because of COVID. So I had no idea really where I was going.
Oh, no.
And I ended up finding like this little sign, and I had to walk halfway down a hallway before I could actually find the place to check in.
Oh, wow. I can only imagine. Like, I can close my eyes and think back to myself walking through triage when COVID wasn't even a thing. And I was alone because Chris went to park the car, and it was like discombobulating, and there was a front desk to go to and get help right away. And I was still like trying to like navigate it all mid contractions. I can't even fathom be like, oh, take the elevator up to your left. And then there's nothing there. Like, I'm picturing you right now. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry that happened.
No, and I'm like leaning on the walls and having contractions.
I can picture it.
10 feet, but it felt like, two city blocks or something to get to.
Right. You walked a mile and a half. Yeah, no, but that's probably what it felt like for real. Wow.
Yeah.
Birth in the time of COVID. My goodness.
Yeah. Being asked to hold, I'm getting ahead of myself, but being asked to keep your mask on while you're actively in labor is not a thing I could do.
I can't imagine.
So I got to the check-in counter and then they asked me to fill out a registration card.
Wow.
And I'm laughing because I was like, I can't write right now.
You're in active labor
contraction.
Yeah.
No. So I literally managed to write the first letter of my last name, and that was it. And then they found me in the computer, thankfully, because I had pre-registered.
Oh, good.
Figure out who I was. But it's like, what are you asking? Have you seen a person who's been before? Like, I can't do this.
And just for everyone listening, not everyone arrives at the hospital, and it's very clear to me that Heather was in active labor at the time. So not everyone is as far dilated as I'm guessing she was at the time. So you might be able to, often you have to do like an electronic signature or something if you've pre-registered. Like, you can normally do that. But you were in active labor.
Yeah, No, I, yeah, good for clarification. It's not always this intense, I would assume, but it definitely was for me. Yeah, so then my husband still hasn't come yet because he had to park the car and stuff afterwards too. And so then they wanted me to come into like a triage room before they would actually give me a room. And I just, you know, needed to lean on things because I was in very active labor. And so I just remember they brought me into this triage room that's basically a very big room that's sectioned off by curtains. And so the only thing I had was a gurney to lean on, and like all the walls are curtains, and they want me to change into a gown so that they could get me on the gurney and check how dilated I was. And I couldn't do it.
Wow.
Bleeding. And my husband found me while we were there. And
I'm glad he found you fast or relatively quickly.
On him. And I was trying to change my clothes and stuff like that and have him help me. But and then I tried to get on the gurney, but like laying down on my back the way they wanted me to, again, just ended up not happening. But they could tell enough by that I was in active labor.
I mean, I can tell that you're in active labor.
So I actually don't know how dilated I was at that time because I could never stay still enough for them to do that.
Yeah.
In the positions they wanted.
Which is fine because they're just basically checking to see if your water's broken, if there's any meconium, right, how far along you are, whether they're going to admit you or not. Oh, they were going to admit you.
Yep. Definitely got admitted. I should say, I don't ever remember my water breaking. I mean, I never had a big splash moment like you see on TV or anything like that, or even a trickle. So I don't know when that happened, but it wasn't intact when baby was born either. So I don't know what happened there. But.
So then you got into your labor and delivery room?
Yep. So I got into the room, and again, I had no idea what to expect because we hadn't been able to do the tours or anything like that. Some of the people I followed on Instagram had kind of said, these are the typical things we're going to have in L&D rooms. And so these are things you can ask for and stuff. In positions that might feel more comfortable. One of the positions I'd been in for a little bit when I was at home that had kind of helped to have a moment to like sit and relax was actually sitting backwards on the toilet.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Leaning over the toilet.
Yeah.
And so I told them I wanted to do that and they're like, okay. But then they showed me the bathroom and it was like a seat with just a pipe behind it going straight up. And so there was nothing
to lean on. They can put a pillow, and I've actually seen people put smaller birth balls right there. So you can kind of lean it up against, just for anyone listening and thinking, what if they're in that circumstance? But the toilet is an amazing place to labor. And for anyone who's really short, like myself, your feet might not touch the ground in some of those hospital bathroom toilets. I'm pretty short. So my doula, and that's someone who provides physical, emotional, and educational support during pregnancy, birth and postpartum, she grabbed little tubs, like the little bassinets, I think they help with like watching the baby, and flip them upside down and put my feet on them. So you can always augment things and ask the wonderful labor and delivery nurses for support too. But the toilet, I'm telling you, it's an amazing place to labor because just innately in our brains, we relax when we're sitting because we know what happens there. Things come out of our body and it just helps us to kind of soothe ourselves and open up our pelvic floor with how we're sitting as well, which helps to bring the baby down.
Yeah. So that would have been nice to put a ball there or something. One of the overall themes of my birth story is it all could have gone a little bit better if there had just been a little more communication and support.
Yeah.
Because basically they were like, oh, well, that's all we have. So I guess if that's not good, then you can be on the bed.
Oh, no. Did they offer to break down the bed for you? Labor and delivery beds are like transformers.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
They didn't.
And I know
they said they could like sit on it or lean on it.
Yeah, I mean, but heart goes out to all healthcare workers right now during COVID. So that is said, but this is your birth, right? And
right.
Your body's moving mountains, literally bringing a human into the world. Like you deserve a few things. I do want to ask, were you tested and you and your husband tested for COVID at any point?
They had me do a COVID test. I want to say like at 38 or something like that, but they never tested him and they never tested me again.
Wow. That was weeks ago. Yeah. Cause you were 41 in a day or 40. You were 40 weeks in one day. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I know it's different at every medical facility and at every point during this global pandemic that we're under, but right. I've heard stories from people getting tested when they're in labor. So, I mean, it's a lot. So it's like, oh, safety, should she have been? Or I'm glad she didn't have to go through that. I don't know. Either way, we'll move on.
You didn't have any symptoms or anything. Great. Of it. So that was good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I asked him at the time when I asked my OB, I was like, wait, aren't you going to test my husband?
Yeah.
he could have it too. He's going to be there. And she's like, no, it's not the protocol.
But you were both told to wear masks the entire time.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go into that. What was that like during labor?
Awful.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
No. And I mean, they asked me to, but then I, especially when I was really, you know, panting and stuff like that, it just, I for anyone who's listening, I'm a strong advocate for masks, and you definitely can, they can breathe through them, but it felt just like a little more blockage than felt comfortable at the time.
Oh, so yeah, there's a difference between going grocery shopping with a mask on and being in active labor. I totally understand. And I also understand why their rules are there as well. But my heart goes out to healthcare workers and people giving birth during this time. So yeah, I can only imagine needing to pull it down while you're, wow. And because you go into that labor brain too, and then you almost get pulled out of it. Because at this point, are you still unmedicated with your labor?
At that point, I was still unmedicated. Yeah.
So it's really intense.
Yeah. And it was just, I was just like, I can't. Thankfully, they didn't push it too much. You know, they definitely asked me a few times to keep my mask on. But when it kept coming off, everybody else wore masks and they were just like, whatever, she's not, it's fine.
Yeah.
and they just kind of let it be. I think that they kind of realized that you just can't try to force a person who's in labor to keep the mask on if it's not working for them.
Yeah. So I know. So how did things go? At what point were you checked to see how far dilated you were?
Yeah, they checked at one point. I don't even remember what they saw or felt at that point, but it didn't feel like they checked it very often.
That's okay.
But my contractions were coming. I mean, it was, for me, really intense, really a lot of pain was happening. And they were coming less than 2 minutes apart and lasting for a minute or more.
Oh my gosh.
So really, I had like no time to kind of relax for a second before it came back again.
Yeah.
So it really started to hurt a lot. I started actually to have kind of almost like a little mini panic attack, like, oh my god, I'm about to be in that much pain again, when I have, you know, only like 30 seconds to prepare or something, or take a breath of non-contraction time. So it started getting pretty intense. And in retrospect, what would have really helped me in that moment was having like one of the labor delivery nurses come and just be there with me and, you know, get in my face and say, you can do this, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
You got this.
Or having a doula there, but under the circumstances, or even if you wanted or didn't want a doula, you know, so many people can't have that, but a birthing coach,
right.
Someone there to be like,
right.
Or be like, hey, try this position or sit on the
exactly.
birth ball, or let's try a Rebozo, or all the different tools and techniques that we have, or can you get in the shower?
Right.
You know, there's so much that we can do during labor. And I love partners, right? Like your partner, and you know, they're amazing, but they're not trained in birth, right? So they love you, and it's really hard sometimes for them to see the person they love the most in pain too. It's hard to know how to support that. So yeah,
right. That was our experience, and we really wanted to have a doula come, but we weren't. At that point, it almost felt thankful that even my husband could come.
Right.
They were saying we're only limiting one person, and it's one person for the entire time. Like you can't even like swap out. Not that I would swap my husband out for a doula, but afterwards, if we wanted somebody visiting or anything.
But someone might want their mom, or you know, yeah. I mean, it's so hard to. Yeah, it's so hard to give birth during this time. I mean, it's hard giving birth at any point and all the challenges, but especially during this time. So
yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It felt like we missed out on some things. We didn't even get to do like birthing classes or stuff. You know, I've heard of so many people who make really lasting like year many years friendships from people they met during their birthing class, and then the babies play together, and we didn't get to do that because they were all on Zoom.
Yeah.
COVID kind of felt, we felt a little gypped from COVID in a few ways. And I'm, of course, I always feel like I have to say I'm thankful that really in the end everything was fine, but you know, it was still hard, and I still acknowledge that even though everything was okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And here on the show, you can just say that was really, really hard. You know, like we always want to say the caveat because we're, you know, good humans, but like, you could just be like, that was really hard. That sucked. Like, no, it sucked. I wish it would have been different.
Yeah. And I really, I'm a person who doesn't have that many close friends, especially like local friends. Most of my friends have moved. And so I was like, maybe this is an opportunity to make friends, and then we'll have babies at the same age and stuff. And nope, didn't get that.
Well, I'm hopeful there'll be play dates in the very new future.
Exactly.
So take us back to that moment. Your contractions are on top of each other. You don't have, I mean, you have an amazing partner, but you don't have that additional support that you really needed in that moment. So did you opt for some pain medication?
Yeah. So I actually, between the nurses and the doctor, I really kind of felt pushed into taking medication. I had really wanted to not. I wanted to just kind of be able to feel my body's instincts and trust my body. But the doctor, I remember, came. It was not my doctor. It was one of the others from their team. And this doctor happened to be male. He came and said, you know, I've seen lots of births, and there's people with experiences all along the pain spectrum. It's not too bad. Some it's really, really, really bad. And you seem like you're more on that really bad side. So, you know, it makes sense if you want to use some painkillers, some drugs. And it really, I mean, I never was like, they never said you have to or anything like that, but it really felt like this is the option. This is the only option. If you want any relief from what's going on for you, the option is drugs. And that's it. And so I went for it. I kind of said, you know, I really was hoping not to, but if you think that's what I need to do. And so they gave me narcotics.
And I want to say, there's nothing wrong with that choice, right?
Of course.
But absolutely. I wish that you would have been like, do you want some, you know, aqua therapy by taking a shower? We have a TENS machine that can help. Like, we have these other tools and resources. But, you know, you did what you needed to in that moment and under the circumstances.
And I had hoped they would offer some of those. And I guess my, you know, laboring brain also was like, well, if they're not offering those, this is the only good option.
Yeah.
Because they don't think these ones are good. And really, in hindsight, they're used to people taking drugs there. And
yeah. And also, when you're in your labor brain, like, you're so easily swayed in different ways. So the minute you hear pain, here's this relief, this is what I'm recommending, you're not in your normal state of mind where you can be like, oh, what are the benefits? What are the risks? What if I wait? Like, doing the brain acronym that we talk about, and I'll put in the show notes. You're so easily swayed. And that's why we talk so much about having a doula whenever possible. But that wasn't in the cards for you. And this is your story and your journey. And you made the very best decision for yourself in that situation with the information you were provided with and the guidance of the care provider who walked into that room.
Right.
Did it help?
So when I talked to them, so I was saying, well, you know, I guess we can try some of this, but I want to feel the urge to push. I want to be able to be present when that happens. And so they said, oh, we can give you some narcotics. They're short lived. They'll wear off quick and like within an hour or something like that. And so you'll still be able to feel it. And so they gave me narcotics. They didn't help.
Oh,
pain was
no.
still there. So they waited a little bit and they gave me a second dose of the narcotics and still wasn't really helping. I mean, it took like a bit of the edge off, but really not much at all.
Yeah.
Really wasn't helping. And I was still in a lot of pain. I was still, you know, they wanted me to kind of take some time to relax and stuff. And I'm like, I can't relax. What are you talking about? And so long story short, I agreed to an epidural.
Yeah.
You know, I even remember like having enough wherewithal to say, you know, I really, again, I want to be able to feel the urge to push. I want to be able to feel the baby come out. And they said, okay, that'll be no problem. You know, we can do this. You can have, you know, have some relief, and then we can turn it down. When it's time to push, you'll still be able to feel it all. It'll still be fine. And I was like, okay, that sounds good enough. Or something fine. And so we went ahead with it. Of course, then I'm confined to the bed because I have the epidural. Yeah. And I'm still kind of loopy from the narcotics and stuff too. And so once it actually really hit, I couldn't really feel anything. And I was all loopy from the narcotics and I fell asleep.
And your body maybe needed a rest. That is one of the gifts of an epidural, is sometimes your body just needs a rest, especially if there's a stalling in progression too. So, but we also know that epidurals can slow down the progression of labor. So it works many ways. But yeah, do you remember how far along you were when you got the epidural?
They didn't tell me. But the progression, it was progressed. Like the intense pain I was in was actually probably because baby was about to be ready to come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course I didn't know that. And I feel like they didn't check, but that might be my not recalling right. But anyway, they put the monitors on me and I was kind of getting loopy. They said, okay, yeah, definitely go to sleep. You'll need your rest. It's going to be a long process. And so I fell asleep and I remember waking up and kind of looking over my husband saying, it feels like it's been a while, hasn't it? And he was like, yeah, actually, like nobody's been in here for almost an hour. Nobody's like checked on anything. And I was like, okay, I guess that's normal. And I kind of fell back asleep. And then next thing I know, I'm woken up with a cacophony around me of just tons of people rushing into the room and two nurses getting in my face saying, you have to push, you have to push now.
Oh, did the baby's heart rate drop?
Well, yes, but they didn't tell me that. They just said, you have to push.
Oh, no.
And I was like, why? What's happening? They're like, just push, just push.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Oh my God, is the baby okay? Am I okay? Oh. And just push, just push. And it was just this really intense thing. And they were just saying, I have to push. And then I started trying to push. And I wanted to like go and like push with my mouth open. Like, no, you have to close your mouth. And like, I tried to close my mouth and push with my mouth closed, and it made my head hurt excruciatingly. And I was like, I can't, this hurts. And they bet you have to close your mouth and just push.
What's happening? Heather, I'm so sorry.
And then the doctor says he needs to do an episiotomy. And having done a little bit of research, I was like, well, I thought it was better to just let myself tear naturally. I really didn't want to get cut.
But they wanted to get the baby out immediately.
And he's like, no, I need to do an episiotomy. And so he did it, even though I kind of was feeling like I was saying no, but he's like, no, we have to. That didn't really feel great. And then they used the vacuum to help. And then eventually after a few times of pushing my mouth closed and making my head explode in pain, I just ignored them and pushed with my mouth open and, you know, made big growly noises. And so I went from totally asleep to babies out in 10 minutes.
Whoa. Wow. Wow.
And it was incredibly intense. And I had no idea what was happening. And they didn't tell me until afterwards that the baby's heart had dropped. Apparently, the cord had wrapped once around her neck and then twice around her foot. And I didn't have the wherewithal at that time to say, had you told me that, I would have pushed and I would have been all in. I just was so confused about what's happening.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, so the baby comes out. This is the part where I always cry. The baby comes out and I had come in, you know, not really saying I had huge birth plan or anything like that. You know, I had the goal of not using any medications. And then I wanted to do skin to skin as soon as possible and delay cord clamping.
Yeah.
And that was really all I had said. And so but the baby comes out and he holds her up and says something like, here, mama, here's your baby. And kind of holds her towards me. And I remember I reached out my hand thinking I was going to take her and hold her. And my fingertips just brush her toes. And then he takes her away to the other side of the room for the NICU team to check her out and make sure that everything's okay.
I'm so sorry.
But again, he didn't tell me why.
He didn't say, hey, this was an emergent situation. We want to make sure she's okay. There was just, there was no communication there. So you felt like empty.
Yeah. And my husband, I mean, he was there for the delivery and of course everything and as supportive as he could be. And then baby was born and he rightfully went with her to check and make sure that she's okay and welcome her. But it just, even though I was in this room full of so many people, I felt so alone. And like, I still didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if the baby was okay and what was happening. And I'm still like, you know, loopy. And like, I was just asleep a few minutes ago and everything too. And it was a really hard moment. But she was fine.
Oh, good.
I guess she was a little bit blue at the beginning, but she was totally fine. And then they were able to bring her over and I got to hold her.
Good.
And that was okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. I know it's an emotional to go through it. You're in a warrior and she is too, right? Like you guys moved mountains to come together and have this experience. And I'm really sorry that it wasn't what you wanted. It sounded like the circumstances of the world played a big role in it not being what you wanted and continues to play a role. But I'm proud of you for the advocating you did for yourself throughout your pregnancy and as much as you could in labor too. Like you used your voice and
I tried. Yeah.
Yeah, you really did. And wow. So we said it.
If there's any L&D people listening, the main thing that I would give if I could give feedback to the hospital was, I really felt like they forgot I was a person who had never done this before. And that feeling continued even after the birth. Well, the whole time I was there, I actually had a hemorrhage. So I had to go have emergent care for that afterwards.
Wow.
And again, nobody told me what was happening, how bad it could be or anything like that through that whole process. And then even after when we were in the kind of recovery time that we were there, we had a few good nurses, but honestly, a lot of them kind of, it felt like they were just coming in and doing their jobs and they kind of forgot that, you know, this is the first time I've ever done this and I need some care and attention and narration of what's happening rather than just doing it.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm gonna pass it along. It's so incredibly important. And again, we all understand what healthcare providers are under during this
Absolutely.
Time, but this is your transition to parenthood. And when people don't feel supported in these situations, it can often feel very traumatic and lead to increased rates of postpartum depression and mental health struggles postpartum. And we need to be talking about this more often. So Heather, I really appreciate you opening up and sharing that journey.
Thanks.
So you said at the beginning that now you're working with midwives. And so I just want to spend a couple minutes that we have left. Like, what has been, how is this experience now and this pregnancy felt different? Do you feel heard now? Do you feel supported in a different way?
Yeah, well, I transferred care kind of halfway through. So I've only had one appointment so far with my midwife. But that being said, it really felt incredibly different this time around. Well, first of all, the midwife, before I even had an appointment with her, when I was calling to transfer care and I said I wanted to have a midwife, they actually had sent it to the midwife to triage. And she called me and talked to me for half an hour or more just about all the pros and cons. And she was saying, you know, that because of now I have this hemorrhage history that happened after the birth. And then also because of my age and my BMI and the potential for high blood pressure, those are all kind of risk factors that none of them make me not qualified for midwifery care, but they're all kind of niggles or worries of kind of maybe OB care might be better than midwifery care.
Yeah.
But she kind of talked me through that and said, you know, if you want to try we can start with midwifery, or maybe we do kind of a hybrid where you see both me and an OB. It might end up being that you need to deliver with an OB instead of me or a midwife, but you know, we can work with you, and we can try to figure this out together. And that felt totally different, and like really was giving me some autonomy with trying to figure that out rather than just saying, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So that was awesome.
Oh, good.
And that was before I'd even ever seen her. And so then when I did see her, she again spent a lot of time really listening to me. She asked me about my birth story from last time and the experience and what's making me feel like I wanted to have midwifery care, but also, you know, what went on last time to, you know, see what we want to have go on this time. And I felt really listened to for that. And then because of those different kind of high risk potential things, she was mentioning how there is a recommendation to, I really distinctly remember that she said, we recommend, and then she paused and actually said, so there are national recommendations that say, like, she was like almost intentionally even taking herself out of saying, I'm recommending this. She's saying there are some national recommendations for when people are 40 or older that they induce at 39 weeks.
Yeah.
And then rather than saying something like, so that's our recommendation, how does that sound to you? What do you think, or whatever, or what she said, what's your initial reaction to that idea?
Wow.
And it really made it feel so safe that even if I have an initial reaction, it could change and that'd be fine. But it also gave me the safety to really be able to say, really resistant. I'm really resistant to this induction for recommending just because I'm 40. And she, you know, it made it feel totally okay to say that. And there's no judgment or kind of like, I don't know, some she could have easily presented it in a way that was like, it only gave me a yes or no answer.
Yeah.
But instead it was inviting me to give a longer answer that included my feelings and perspective on it. And it really felt really good.
Wow. I love that. And then afterwards, did she address kind of the risks and the reason and the increased risk of stillbirth and those types of and the placenta?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So she was saying that the reason for this recommendation is she kind of just really focused on that older placentas with people who are older may kind of stop working a little earlier than placentas of younger people. But she really also made sure to reinforce that while there is an increased risk, the overall risk is still very low.
Yes.
And so the overall chances is still very low, but it might be a little bit higher. So therefore there are these recommendations. Mm. And you know, what do you think about that? And when I told her I was feeling pretty resistant to it, she heard me and said, and didn't like push and say, well, this is what you need to do. She said, well, how about, I mean, what would you say to something like a membrane sweep or something rather than a full on induction to kind of just help nudge you along the way? And I was like, you know, I'd be more open to something like that. It felt less invasive, but still let my body take the lead on it.
Mm, I love how you shared so much of this conversation. And I interviewed an OB recently, and I don't know if the episode will air before or after yours does, but I will put it in the show notes of your episode whenever it does air. But the OB was explaining how she really only gets 10 minutes, maybe 15 with patients. So she doesn't have the ability to have these in-depth conversations. So often, especially people of size or people of advanced maternal age feel rubbed wrong because it's like, okay, well, we need to do this and don't forget to take your prenatal, have a nice day, you know?
Mm-hmm. And
within the midwifery model of care, there's often so much more time and flexibility. And of course, I want people to make whatever choice is great for them, but I always want people to be open-minded to learning about the different models of care, and that you can also have, like in your situation, in many situations, that congruent care working with OBs and midwives. It just depends on, you know, the facility and how it's set up and all that stuff. But I think people are so quick to rule out midwifery model of care and think it's only for unmedicated, but it's really not, especially in a medical facility where you're giving birth in a hospital with midwives. You can often still have access to an epidural if that's what you want or if you change your mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Heather. Heather, I really appreciate you sharing your journey with us. And I am so excited for you with your upcoming birth. And have you considered a doula?
We have considered a doula. We actually just met with somebody very recently who we think we're going to go for. So, and fingers crossed, COVID doesn't take a turn to make it so that we aren't allowed to have
one. Okay, I'm moving my legs right now. My fingers crossed immediately. I just crossed my legs too. I wish I had more things to cross because I'm hopeful for you too.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad. And I'll put more resources in the show notes too about the support of a doula. But I really, really appreciate you. And I've really enjoyed going along this journey with you. And I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening and hearing my story.
Yeah. All right, friends. Until next time. Bye.